You're watching Meet the Movie Press. And coming up, we're going to be talking about The Last Jedi trailer, Josh Brolin as Cable, Dolph Lundgren in Aquaman, the animated Spider-Man movie, Jude Law's Young Dumbledore, so much. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good morning. Well, that just happened. Something big just dropped.
It sure did. And we have to talk about it immediately. Okay, I'm Jeff Snyder, editor-in-chief of The Tracking Board, tracking-board.com. Add it to your bookmark. Subscribe to the newsletter. Simon.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ShowbizSimon. You could find me on Facebook. This is Simon Thompson. And I stink of meat today. I went for a barbecue meal last night. BBQ. And literally, I have meat coming out of my pores. So
I can smell it.
I
feel
like
we're
like
taping
brisket,
in Austin.
I apologize for that.
I want to eat you. This morning, minutes ago, Simon and I just huddled up together.
We did. It was cozy.
We spooned. And we watched The Last Jedi trailer.
Yes.
Star Wars The Last Jedi broke this morning out of Star Wars Celebration.
You know that it's Celebration. Orlando. They're literally having to wipe down the seats. People will have been literally peeing.
I wonder how many
their
times
pants.
They're showing it in a row there.
Oh, God. You can just imagine.
Like, let's watch it again.
It's like one massive nerdgasm.
What'd you think? It looked pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, it does look pretty cool. I mean, it's understated. I mean, it had what you would expect. Bit of action, bit of melodrama. A quotable line. What's the one at the end? Time for the Jedi to end. Got all the.
Felt a little bit more classic.
It did.
Actually.
It felt more canon as far as the other Star Wars movies do. I think it's taken itself a little bit perhaps more seriously, and I think it's going to break away from, obviously, Force Awakens was basically New Hope updated. I'm genuinely excited about it, and I think we're going to start to see the brains in Star Wars with this, like we did in Rogue One.
I really like the use of red against like a stark white backdrop in the trailer.
It looks beautiful.
Oh, yes, they spent enough money, but
£12.
Ryan Johnson, man, this guy has come a long way.
Yeah,
I remember when he came to NYU when I was there, and he brought Brick to show us kids. And it has been remarkable to see what he has gone on to. I love the poster. You can almost feel his influence on the poster. It's very clean
again,
and beautiful.
Very classic. Very simple and classic.
Mm-hmm. With Luke facing off against Adam Driver.
Yeah.
And then it looked like Daisy in the middle. I'm excited for The Last Jedi. I'm still don't think I'm converted yet on these films.
Okay.
But I think that any, you know, of any, excuse me, of all of the filmmakers that have contributed to this recent round of movies, Rian Johnson is the one I'm really a believer in.
He's always had a great eye, though. I mean, really simplistic but very effective visuals. I'm genuinely really looking forward to it as a movie and not just a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Which I think is great. Do you want to actually take a look at the trailer? I think we can actually do that today, which is pretty cool.
Oh, man. Okay.
Let's take a little look. Coming up.
I'm assuming that this trailer has been approved for all audiences.
Truth. It's time for the Jedi
spoiler.
That looks pretty fucking cool.
It does, doesn't it?
Disney knows how to give good trailer.
It's beautifully cut as well. I mean, just the visuals and the atmosphere. And I like the fact that, thank God, they haven't given too much away.
Well, yes.
Because sometimes
there's
plenty
of mystery surrounding this movie. Oscar Isaac looked fucking awesome there, running alongside BB-8.
And can I just say, this is going to happen. But when trailers like this drop, there is so much analysis of the trailers, frame by frame. What are the things? What does this mean? What does that mean? I don't want to know too much about that movie. I do want to go in and just have the spectacle. Have another hand moment where it's like, what the fuck? I do want to go in there.
Save that for later. We've got plenty of time for you to bust out the Kevin Hart impression.
He was in my neighborhood this week.
Really?
Kevin Hart dropped by Barnes & Noble at the Grove.
Is that where you live?
I do. I'm homeless. I live in the Grove. I live by the dumpsters.
In the children's book aisle.
Yeah, I do. Reading Go the Fuck to Sleep.
All right. Well, that'll do it for The Last Jedi, because I know my mom's watching this, and she just can't take it.
No,
she
is
just
it too much?
She can't take this Star Wars talk. So instead, let's talk about, like, 7 comic book movies in a row.
You know she's rewatching the trailer. You know she is.
This week, the mystery was finally solved. Mm-hmm. After much speculation, Josh Brolin has been cast as Cable in Deadpool 2. According to The Hollywood Reporter, it is a 4-picture deal, which is, you know, what I had heard had sort of hamstrung the chances of other actors. They didn't want to commit to a long-term sort of thing.
Sure, sure.
Josh Brolin obviously plays Thanos already in the MCU.
Because Pierce Brosnan is busy, clearly. He doesn't have any time on his hands.
But you know, so what did you feel, you know, what did you think about Josh Brolin?
Great casting.
What did you feel about it?
What are you feeling?
What did you think?
I genuinely was, I think it's not an exciting casting for me, but I think he'll absolutely nail it. I mean, the minute that it broke, I was like, I can really see that, and that's going to be fun to watch. I mean, I'm a big fan of his work. I mean, I loved him in Hail Caesar. I thought he was brilliant in Hail Caesar. I think he's going to bring the physicality to it that I think you need for Cable. And I think he can handle a little bit of humor as well very deftly. So I'm genuinely looking for... And I think he'll work really well with Ryan.
Yeah.
As well. I think it'll be a really nice pairing on screen.
I'm imagining like the Josh Brolin sort of from Death Proof.
Yeah.
Or from Grindhouse, I guess it was.
Yeah,
because it was really Planet Terror. But you know, I think he's good casting. I knew that they wanted a star. I knew that they weren't going to like go out on a limb.
But he's not too big a star, though.
No, he's a star. Come on, I mean, he's the lead in movies.
He is.
Whether it's No Country or Gangster Squad or
yeah.
So I do feel like they went the movie star route instead of like the Stephen Lang.
But he's
route.
Not like household name.
Everybody knows who Josh Brolin is. Grew up in.
But if you step out from the filmiverse. I think there are people that they know him and they like him in movies, but he's not like a George Clooney or a Brad Pitt.
No. Obviously.
He's not a movie star. I think he's a movie star, but he's not a movie star, capital M, capital S, you know, for the man on the street.
And that's fair, but yeah. I would have actually liked to have seen this role go to someone who we don't see very often. We get a healthy dose of Josh Brolin, it feels like, each year. So in that sense, it is a little unexciting, as you said. It's a little safe and boring.
And I don't mean that in a
bad way. But I still think he will be good.
Yeah. Oh, he'll absolutely nail it.
Yeah, I just would have liked to have, like, I feel like this role could have gone to a whole number of older actors and it would have been, like, crazy. Like, you know, Ed Harris or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I refer to Josh Brolin as old, one of these old actors.
I mean, he's not old, but how old do you think he is? 45, 50?
Yeah, 45. Could do a Google.
We do have computers.
Hey, today's birthday is Josh Brolin.
So I think this was THR that broke this. They beat Ryan Reynolds, who always likes to tweet out the news.
He does.
He's had like funny graphics.
Well, that's how we were told recently. We were going to find out who was going to be Cable. It was Ryan was going to break it on Instagram.
Right. Boris scooped him.
Didn't happen.
But I have to say I was proud of my team that we decided to steer clear of the Michael Shannon and the David Harbour rumors. Like at a certain point, I do feel like it became a guessing game of sorts. You know, I know that I had thrown Kyle Chandler out there very early on, but that was before the project even had a director. That was just like producer wish list stuff.
Him and Mackenzie Davis. Stephen from Avatar.
Stephen Lang.
Yeah,
right. Stephen Lang, all those names were sort of like wish list sort of things that...
All would have been great choices as well. They all would have been really good.
That was before there was even a director on the project, and obviously he was going to have a big hand in things.
Yeah.
And there was a switch on the in directors. Anyways, Josh Brolin is Cable. Does it bother you at all? Does it matter that he already has a place in the MCU?
No.
Yeah.
He's an actor. Because
it's not a real...
He's an actor. He does...
It's a mocap voice role, but his face is not on screen.
No, absolutely.
So I don't really see the conflict there.
No, I totally didn't cause me any issues with that whatsoever.
In the other corner of the MCU, Shameik Moore and Liev Schreiber are going to be voicing the leads in animated Spider-Man. Shameik Moore is going to be voicing Miles Morales.
Yeah.
Liev Schreiber is going to be voicing an unknown villain. Pretty cool casting, I think. I mean, Liev Schreiber has one of those, amazing voices. He does the inside, is it Inside the NFL or is it Hard Knocks? I forget which one. It's one of those HBO shows. I'm totally blanking. But he has, this great voice.
Mm.
And Shameik Moore, I can totally see him as Miles
Morales. I love him as an actor anyway. I mean, pretty much everything he does, even if he's in a not a great movie, I just really enjoy watching him.
And he already played, Sabretooth?
Yeah.
In Wolverine,
that's
right?
Correct, yeah. Look at that. Didn't come back for that one.
No.
He was really badass.
Yeah. No, I think he'll make a really good villain. I'm actually strangely looking forward to this animated Spider-Man movie, which comes from Lord Miller. Now, I know I said that Ice Cube was going to voice Miles Morales' father.
You did, just
obviously,
a couple of weeks
there was
ago,
a Lord and Miller connection there with the 21 Jump Street movies.
Yep.
I'm now being told that is not going to work out.
Okay.
I don't know.
What, scheduling reasons? Or
I don't know why, because it's a voice role, and it seems like pretty easy money. Mm. But regardless, it's like I got the Liev Schreiber and Ice Cube names back in February.
Okay.
And I came on this show, and I just decided to say Ice Cube instead of Liev Schreiber. I could have rumored them both. I could have rumored Liev instead of Ice Cube. I just figured Ice Cube was the deal that was more likely to make,
yeah,
given his history with Lord Miller and all that. And Liev has a TV show and everything. So it's just luck of the draw.
Yeah. Also, Hollywood changes.
Yeah. But it's like I'm trying to explain, since this is Meet the Movie Press, like my rationale into putting something like that out there. I feel like Ice Cube gives all of his news to Deadline, to Mike Fleming at Deadline. I just figured I had a longer shot of legitimately breaking that, which is why I said it on here. Whereas Liev, I thought I actually stood a chance to get that. Obviously, it was slipped into a Shameik Moore announcement. It wasn't even like the lead over it at Hollywood Reporter. So it was just an interesting way that I am looking at movie news in the course of a given day.
No, absolutely.
We had over at Marvel's crosstown rival,
yes,
DC,
the Dukkha.
Yeah, we've got... it was a relatively slow week over there, but there was one awesome announcement.
Yeah.
What was it, Simon?
Very excited about this. Dolph Lundgren. Which means he can't do Expendables 4.
Right. Which Sly has already walked away from.
Man.
Bummer.
Yeah, so he's going to play one of the villains in the
King
Aquaman
Nereus?
Movie.
Is that it? Is that
I think that's
it?
How you pronounce it.
I have no idea.
Not really up on my sub-aqua guys.
The way that it was positioned... and again, I think this was also Hollywood Reporter. Boris is on a roll this very short week. By the way, a quick note on that. I love that Hollywood was off for Monday and Tuesday with the Jewish holidays.
There
were no deals going down. Yesterday, I emailed Warner Brothers at 4 o'clock. The studio had already shut down for Easter weekend.
One of the few studios that actually is shutting down for Easter.
Right. So Thursday, it seemed like it was a half day on Thursday for Warner Brothers employees. So all this news that we're talking about today hit on Wednesday and Thursday morning. It was a crazy day
Let's get it all out.
Of fucking wild announcements.
A lot of deals being done that day.
So anyways, Dolph Lundgren, the way that it was positioned is that he... sort of a romantic rival for Mera.
I believe so,
A rival of Aquaman for Mera's affections. He feels like he owns Mera in a sense, or that she belongs to him, and he is, trying to kill Aquaman or whatever. So I had described him in a tweet as, he's going to be playing one of the villains.
Yeah.
But director James Wan, God bless him.
J-Dubs.
Yeah. He corrected me, and he said that he's not quite a villain.
Okay.
I mean, a romantic rival, I guess, wouldn't really be a villain. And we also don't know how big this part is.
Sure.
But cool to see Dolph Lundgren being in a huge studio movie.
I will take any opportunity to see Dolph Lundgren back on the big screen. I mean, aside from the fact that I just really enjoy him as an actor, he does a lot of shit. A lot
well,
of his straight-to-DVD stuff is,
Ivan Drago's
is well
a
below
classic,
him.
A classic character, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I genuinely enjoy... I mean, still, for me, Master of the Universe is a terrible film, but a massive guilty pleasure for me. He still has the He-Man.
Exactly. That's what I was just about to say. Yeah. He still has this, like, buff physique, and he's a good-looking guy, and he's a very smart guy, by
he's
all accounts, too.
He's a very smart guy, yeah. He's an astrophysicist.
Is he? Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think he's a cool addition to Aquaman. That definitely bumps up the cool factor on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind Hopefully of indifferent has... towards Aquaman. I mean, Jason Momoa, great.
This is the one that puts him over the top for you?
Not many people say Dolph Lundgren is the one that pushes me over the top, but yeah, I'm now on board with this.
Well,
he's going to be awesome.
Nicole Kidman is his mother, right?
Yeah.
First of all, that... to me, that's when I started thinking, wow, this cast
you
is
see,
really
for,
something.
Yeah, I was excited by that, but for me, that was kind of like when they cast Rene Russo in Thor.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, great, but that's like character actor, female role, doing her thing, might not be a big part. I was like, she's going to do an excellent job.
They wanted her for what? She was in negotiations for Wonder Woman's mother at one point.
Yeah.
So now she's Aquaman's
mother. So I'm kind of like, Dolph Lundgren
But that
actually
makes
is...
sense, given with the Australia thing.
That is true.
Anyways.
That is true.
Aquaman just getting cooler. And then another, I mean, God, so much franchise news. Jude Law cast as young Dumbledore. That was our pal Justin Kroll over at Variety, beating
nice
the
work.
Release by mere minutes.
He's been the first choice for that role for quite a while, though.
Yeah.
Is what I'm hearing.
Oh,
he's,
really?
He's been the go-to guy for quite a while on that. There were some other people in, you know, sort of, you know, they were looking at as plan B and plan C, but he's been the guy that they wanted for about a year now. So.
No, I don't, you know, all due respect to J.K. Rowling, I don't pay attention to this franchise. So I can't say whether I like it or not because I didn't really know Dumbledore.
Mm.
You know, I don't know what would make a good young Dumbledore. So I'm going to cede the floor to you. Like, are you a fan of this casting?
Am I a Harry Potter fan? I would probably say not a massive fan. I do enjoy the movies. I can, you know, take or leave them. I did enjoy Fantastic Beasts. But I do like Jude Law. And, you know, like Colin Farrell, he's having a few roles at the moment, Young Pope, etc., etc., where we're actually getting to see Jude Law, you know, really sort of do his acting chops rather than just being attractive male tentpole star. I'm genuinely, you know, interested in seeing this. For me, it balances out that Johnny Depp element from Fantastic Beasts, where, you know, I was like, oh, fuck, Johnny Depp again doing kooky character. This, to me, is kind of like the Ezra Miller kind of level of casting, interesting stuff where you're going to see someone with gravitas. And I think from Dumbledore as a character being one of the, you know, the lovey, one of the actor roles in the Harry Potter stuff, we're going to get to see him do something really interesting, I think. And I like watching Jude Law. I think he's great.
I do see. I'm just
I
happy for Jude Law because I like him too.
Yeah.
And there were plenty of funny young Pope,
so
young
I think
Dumbledore.
We're going to see some of the gravitas that we saw in the Harry Potter movies coming through.
What I thought was interesting is just that Warner Brothers loves this guy.
Yeah.
You know,
very much. Yeah.
He's in, King Arthur coming up, Contagion. They really gave started his career pretty much with like. I know he had Talented Mr. Ripley, but then he did AI, where he was the robot, the male prostitute or whatever. Anyways.
But no, I'm genuinely like, yeah, I'm on board with that.
When's he going to do a fucking superhero movie?
I don't know.
That's coming. That day is definitely coming, my friends.
Yeah, I mean, would you want him as a goodie or a baddie? I think he'd make a really kick-ass villain.
Yeah.
I would love to see him play. He would make a brilliant Lex Luthor.
You think so?
I think he'd be a brilliant Lex Luthor. I mean, I'm assuming that Jesse Eisenberg is not coming back.
What about
back.
The Riddler?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah. I would be on board for that.
Let's move this along.
So you can see some blogs saying, you look in the running for the Riddler.
You pick what's next.
Okay, let's talk about Labyrinth spinoff. Is it a spinoff or is it a reboot?
I didn't understand that language.
I've read different things. You know, some people are saying it's a spin-off. Some people are saying it's a reboot of the original film. Obviously, classic movie.
It's just another world set in the Labyrinth, I guess. I mean,
I would assume so. I mean, you can't. You know, I mean, Labyrinth is a classic, but it's a slightly flawed movie. I watched it again recently on a plane. I do really enjoy that movie. I don't want to see them redo that. I would be very interested in seeing within that world. It's a huge world. lots of characters.
I have no idea, what the plan is for this really. But Fede Alvarez is now at the helm.
Yes,
and it's that's Sony, cool. I liked Don't Breathe, and Sony's a big believer in this guy. Sometimes you kind of have to sink your hooks into a filmmaker, and it seems like Sony is doing that with Fede.
And again, I think he's one of those simplistic directors where the visual and the tension and stuff are very, very simple, but very, very effective. So he won't over-egg it.
Right, he's doing the next Lisbeth Salander movie.
He is, yeah. What's that? Spider's Web, yeah.
So, they're big believers in him, and I think he's a strong fit for the material. I mean, there's a certain darkness to his stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to see them revisit the characters from the original movie. I would like to see something different. I don't want to see a new Goblin King. I don't think you can touch David Bowie. But
back in the day, this was at Variety, and this was like fucking years ago, 5 or 6 years ago or something. I don't even remember. But I had heard Alexander Skarsgård for the Goblin King.
Okay, I could buy that.
He has that lean, huge, giant physique.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Fassbender, he's available.
He could kind of pull off Bowie hair. I don't know.
He could do. He can do anything.
That Alexander Skarsgård.
But I would rather see, you know, something, a new strand. But don't ever ask Jennifer about The Labyrinth. She hates talking about that.
I made the mistake of
asking her about it. I can't. It was for that terrible Ron Howard comedy that she did with like Vince Vaughn and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, that was awful. Not good with Kevin James, right?
Yeah, and I asked about Labyrinth then, and she really doesn't like talking about Labyrinth. It was a long time ago.
I like Channing Tatum in that movie, by the way.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't even remember the movie that we're
there
even talking
many
about.
There are plus points about that film. But what was it called? It was.
Ah, shit.
That would have been a good title for it. Ah, shit. Yeah, it was not a great...
The Dilemma.
Yes. There was no dilemma about whether you should see that film. No, you shouldn't.
What a title for a comedy.
Yeah, it was not good. It wasn't funny.
You know what sounds funny?
What does sound funny?
Night School, starring Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart. Did I mention he was in my neighborhood this week?
Yes, you did. You did. Yeah. Did you talk to him? Like,
I didn't. I did think
you just
about.
Like, pointed him.
I was actually. No, that'd be terrible.
Like, I don't understand.
No, I did think though. I mean, I was living. You know, I live not far away from there.
And you saw him. It wasn't like you saw him like in a magazine. Like, oh yeah.
No. He was doing a FaceTime, a Facebook Live thing. And I did think I was working from home that day, and I was I might go down to the Grove. Then I went, no, that's really weird.
Yeah, that would be a little creepy.
Yeah.
But he would probably appreciate your impression.
He would. I'm sure he would love that.
I'm sure you can improvise some dialogue off this log line. Night School, based on an idea by Kevin Hart that he co-wrote with his Band of Merry Men.
Correct.
He's going to be playing a guy who goes to night school to try to get his GED, him in a band of misfits.
I did, when I heard it was night school, I was like, is that night with a K? Is it a sequel to the terrible Martin Lawrence
exactly.
movie?
I knew where you were going with that. Night school, I don't think I've ever had to go to night school besides when I was studying to get my license.
I've never been to night school.
It sounds like fertile ground for shenanigans.
It could be like Fist Fight, but good.
What's interesting to me about this was that, you know, Kevin Hart obviously did the Ride Along franchise with Tim Story, who's going to do this movie, and producer Will Packer.
Tim does comedy very, very well.
Right, so he did that with Ice Cube. He did Central Intelligence with The Rock. Mm-hmm. This doesn't seem to be a two-hander in the same vein. Like, he is definitely going to be the star front and center, and the other band of misfits will be his supporting cast, his entourage, if you will. You know, even The Wedding Ringer, he was with Josh Gad. Like, I wonder if they will get a comedic equal for him in this film, or he can just take it alone. That's what
I would like to see him play off a dry female.
Him and Kate McKinnon would be great.
Yeah. Kate McKinnon. Now doing the movie. Gillian.
Jacobs?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would.
Well, that's very Community, I feel like.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But they'd play really well together because she is brilliantly sardonic.
I like her on Love.
Yeah, true.
Okay, so we're not getting any Kevin Hart. We're not going to get any improvised, like, I'm in night school. Where my book? Where my pants? Bitch stole my pants.
But also, we're talking... That's all I've got. You know, I'm sure he'd be genuinely a little bit offended if I did that. Impressed.
No, I listen.
I didn't get in that school. Am I like that with armor? Where's the rock?
You do it out of love.
I do. I do. It's an affectionate.
We yeah, to be clear.
I wouldn't do it to his face. Maybe I should, though. He might find it quite funny.
We love Kevin Hart and we love The Rock on this show.
We do. And talking of The Rock.
There's more. I don't even have rock news on my
shit. Well, turned up on Jungle Cruise at Disney the other day.
What? You mean the production thing? Like it's going to start production in a few months?
Well, I guess so. He turned up basically, you know, the Jungle Cruise ride at Disney. He basically turned up as like one of the impromptu skippers.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, because he's doing the movie.
Jungle Cruise movie, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the story itself where I was like, okay.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool, though. How psyched would you be if you were at Disney and then all of a sudden The Rock turns up and captains your ship? It's not a euphemism, but...
No.
Hey, Dwayne, you can captain my ship.
It's not a euphemism.
Not a euphemism. That's pretty awesome.
That does sound like a lot of fun.
I'm a little bit worried that he's doing a lot of these sort of family friendly movies. I do like him when he's being, you know.
You want to see like badass. R-rated Rock.
Yeah, I do enjoy that. And I'm just a little bit like, he does a spate of these movies every now and again.
Because The Rock is for everyone.
I want The Rock just for me, though.
Well, I mean, Baywatch is R.
Yeah, yeah, true. Looking forward to that.
That is restricted. That is not for the kids.
No. I might be interviewing him, actually, next weekend. He's in L.A., so I might be having a little chat with him. I could do my Kevin Hart impression for him.
Yeah.
See if he gets really offended and punches me in the face.
No, I think
he'd love it.
He would.
He would love it, Dwayne.
Yeah, he's the man.
He's a bit of a laugh.
Okay.
Coming to America sequel.
Oh, yeah.
Hello. Did not expect that news. I thought it was like from The Onion this week when I read that.
Yeah. I had sort of heard about it a couple weeks ago and finally got the confirmation yesterday. It happened to be the day after Charlie Murphy died. And it's, yeah, the story is that the original writers and people... I got plenty of shit yesterday because these guys, you know, like the original writers, didn't they steal this from Art Buchwald? Like, you know, how can he be coming back to write the script? He's dead.
Yeah.
Barry Blaustein, David Sheffield are coming back. They have closed a deal at Paramount to write a sequel for Coming to America.
I don't know where they can take this.
Really? Because I actually was thinking, and let me forth a blasphemous opinion, whereas that I think Coming to America is overrated.
Take that back.
I know.
It's like a great movie. It's a great movie.
I think I saw it when I was too young, and maybe a lot of the jokes went over my head, so maybe it is definitely worth going back and reassessing.
Yeah.
But, you know, based on my one viewing as a 14-year-old, you know, I did not love
the
movie.
When you knew nothing, clearly.
Yes. I was just a budding little movie squirt. Anyways, I think that there's ripe, fertile ground for this, given America's stance on immigration and that kind of stuff, and foreigners, and, like, I don't know. There's imagine, like, Borat.
Yes.
You know, if like, I don't know.
Like a black Borat.
A black Borat with Eddie Murphy.
Do you think he'll do all the characters in the barbershop and stuff again?
Reggie Marciano! Reggie Marciano!
I have no idea, but... I can actually see this somehow working. By the way, the movie in 1988 made like $288 million, which I didn't even bother to convert that, but that's like a lot of money. That's like a $400 million comedy.
It was a big hit.
Yeah, and it couldn't have cost much, so I think it makes sense.
Do you think they'll bring back Arsenio Hall?
He's available. That I don't know about. I don't know about any of that supporting cast, to be honest. I mean, you would think that they would have to, like...
James Earl Jones? You'd have to bring back James Earl Jones.
How could you not? But as far as I know, it is being developed with Eddie. So the interesting thing was, after doing a little bit of research yesterday, Eddie tweeted out something a few weeks ago teasing a sort of Coming to America sequel. Where he, like, put a photo up and people were asking all these questions. And then he claimed that his account had been hacked and... and deleted not just the tweet but the entire account. He left the service after the uproar that this tease caused, and then TMZ of all places did some digging and confirmed with sources close to Eddie that he is working on a sequel.
Okay,
they actually said that he was writing a sequel. I'm sure he has a hand. I'm sure he's working with David and Barry, who are like 65, 70 years old.
He gets very involved in these projects.
I mean, no, he's worked closely with these guys for years. Nutty Professor, Boomerang. So they all go way back. And Eddie has his team they've closed the deal. So I imagine, why would you bring those guys on to write if it wasn't for Eddie? You know, he's going to be coming back.
What do you think the chances are of Kevin Hart getting on board? I would like
to see Eddie Murphy, Kevin Hart, and Bettina would be fucking amazing.
Yeah, right.
Yep, that brilliant. I mean, I hope Paramount watches this.
Ugh. Just saying. I mean, if you're looking for Kevin, he's at the Grove a lot. Turns out.
Anyways,
so,
but
stalk him there.
So I take it you're familiar, and we have to read our ad soon. But I take it you're familiar with Black Twitter.
I am. Yes,
dude. Black Twitter had a field day with this news yesterday. Like, I'm still getting notification alerts. It's been a gigantic story, which is pretty funny considering it's the story's about a writing assignment, essentially.
Yeah.
for two 70-year-old white guys.
The film has such a huge following.
Yeah.
Such a huge following.
Yeah, that's what I learned yesterday. Like,
and also, I still believe...
It means a lot, especially to the black community.
Yeah. Well, also, Eddie Murphy is, you know, there's still a hunger for his stuff. He just hasn't had a lot of projects, and obviously Mr. Church didn't really hit the mark.
I think it didn't.
People are desperate for Eddie Murphy to come back and do what he does best, which is...
It.
You know, comedy like this, I think it's great.
All right, let's get into it with Blue Apron.
So one of the reasons that we can do this show is the fact that we have sponsors, which is absolutely fantastic. They invest in this and they invest in us. And because of that, we're able to do what we do for you guys. If you like the show, really appreciate it. Subscribe, WeTreat, tell everybody. Tell them about Blue Apron as well, because it's the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the entire country, America. Is pretty big, Jeff, in case you did not realize that. Pretty big place. So their mission is basically to make incredible home cooking accessible to everybody. It achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for their ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Did you know that they established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranches across America? Obviously, American jobs are really important right now. Seafood is sourced sustainably, which is really, really important right now, under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch, which is a hugely important program. So what does it do? It basically, cooking together builds strong family bonds. Research shows that the Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often than families that don't use Blue Apron. And those who spend a lot in restaurants or at high-end grocery chains can now spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal. Obviously, if you eat out a lot, you'll know what a good bargain that is.
I do.
Okay, so it's affordable. For less than $10 a person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes. So none of this, like, you can have it all year round. It does change as the seasons do with the food. With pre-portioned ingredients, which means that also the waste is minimal. It's easy, it's flexible, it's guaranteed. Their freshness guarantee promises that every single ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. There's none of this, like, half-rotten tomatoes. None of that shit. Everything that arrives at your house is good to go. So, what do? You want to get on board with this, obviously, because it's delicious and movies and food go well together. You can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping. Two frees. Really important. Not paying for that. By going to blueapron.com/meat. M-E-E-T. Not meat, as in how much meat did I eat last night. I smell like brisket. Blueapron.com/meat. That's blueapron.com/meat. M-E-E-T.
Wonderful. And with that...
Let's talk about some more movies.
Let's talk about The Fate of the Furious.
Yes, I did not see this, unfortunately.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah.
What were you doing last night? You couldn't go see an 8 o'clock show?
Well, I was eating meat.
Yeah.
This is Hollywood. That sounded quite rude, actually. But yeah, no, I was going to go to a screening this week, but on Tuesday night I went to Seder.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Good for you.
Isn't that great?
I saw this back at CinemaCon. I guess now I can talk about it.
I think you can.
First of all, let's give it up to Universal for this publicity push, because this movie has been everywhere.
Saturation, they
yes,
call it.
Yes, they definitely did their job. I loved... Did you... I was, like, impressed and horrified by Bloomberg's statistics thing. Did you see that?
I did not see that.
It was unbelievable. I don't know how many reporters they had watching all seven Fast and Furious movies. But they did, like, detailed graphs for, like, just, like, shit nobody needs to know.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about.
That's not a shit day at the Bloomberg office.
It was just like, this is what you're devoting all this journalistic energy to. It was hilarious.
Good content.
Bill Simmons had Neil Moritz on his podcast.
Yes.
That was an illuminating chat. There was a lot of interesting stuff. Ringer had a great package for Fate of the Furious, including why Corona is like the official drink of the franchise, even though there's no money exchanging hands. Like,
okay.
You know, they're not paying to be in the movie. Universal's not paying them for the right to use the brand. Yeah. I don't know. A lot of interesting stuff out there about Fate of the Furious. Did you see that the Wrap had a great story from Umberto Gonzalez about filming a tag with Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham?
Yeah.
And they didn't tell Vin Diesel about it, and when he found out, he flipped out.
Lost his shit, yeah.
And Universal had to recall Prince. Like, that's money. That is, you know, when you're recalling Prince and having to send them back out again, that's a different thing.
Also, apparently that sequence is absolute badass, and it was going to lead to a possible spin-off or something else. I would love to see those guys going head-to-head, wow, kicking lumps out of each other. So I would love to see that.
That scene in Fate of the Furious, which, again, I thought was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's entertaining to watch. It's too long, and it's felt very familiar. It lacked a certain something. It lacks some magic without Paul Walker. It really did feel a little familiar. But again, still better than a lot of shitty temple movies that we see.
Yeah. And it's just meant to be dumb fun. I mean,
and it is very dumb, and it is fun. So the scene with Dwayne and Jason Statham is actually really good.
Cool.
And I can see how there are rumors or, like, you know, internal discussions. Hey, should we be spinning this off, these two guys?
Yeah.
But anyway, so
and that would not hurt Statham. I mean, you know, as much as I love Jason Statham, a lot of his movies have not really done box office in the way that they potentially should have done.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's an international.
They've done okay. Yeah, I mean, people would go and see that in droves.
But yeah, it's. I understand if you're Vin Diesel and you're the creative steward of this franchise or whatever with Chris Morgan, and you're the face of the franchise now with Paul Walker gone, and you find out about this.
But is he now the face of the franchise? Because I think The Rock is now the face of the franchise for Fast and Furious, which I think is where some of the rub comes from.
I mean, yes, that is true, but Vin is still the face of the franchise. Like, you know, he just is.
But you see, I mean, as much as I love Vin Diesel, and I do enjoy the Fast and Furious movies, I think they're massive fun. I think it's The Rock that's bringing people, not Vin Diesel. I don't think he's, when you compare what the draw is, I think people enjoy Vin Diesel.
As Dom Toretto, they love him in this character. The Rock, because he's in so many things, you know, like, I don't think that Fast belongs to him because he belongs to so many different properties.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, Vin Diesel is so closely associated with this one. Anyway, so it's like that Rap story, though, and I'm not going to get into specifics.
But apparently we're going to see it on the Home Entertainment release now. Apparently we're going to see that as like an extra. Idea.
It really was just the tip of the iceberg regarding some of the rumors that I've heard about the behind the scenes on this movie. I guess what's crazy is just like I actually talked to several colleagues at CinemaCon about sort of what I'd heard, and I don't even think that I could get away with reporting it as a white reporter. I think that people would put a racial connotation on a sort of like behind the scenes story. And it wouldn't even go over well, which I think speaks to a lot to the climate in this country, where a reporter's race is going to sort of dictate how his story is received and that kind of thing. But anyways, I'm not here to speculate about that kind of shit in public, so I'm not going to talk about it. But we can talk about another project with a ton of drama. Before we pivot, and we're going to pivot to Triple Frontier over at Paramount.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about the box office for Fate of the Furious? Because it's not quite as well as Furious 7.
No. I mean, the Thursday night previews, it did $10.4 million, and Fast 7 did $15.8 million. So it's a little bit behind at the moment. I mean, they're still looking at it doing $100 million for the weekend domestic, which is fine. $280 million worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, they're still in good shape.
Yeah, it's far from being a flop.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think that, you know, Kong is, what, $500 million for its run, and this is going to take over half of that, likely, globally. But it does, Fast and Furious, I did a piece for Forbes on this, and I'm going to be revisiting it in a slightly different angle on Monday, when we know the box office for this. The majority of the box office for this, like many franchises, actually comes from overseas.
Yes.
So if it doesn't have a monster, I mean, still, 10.4 million is not to be sniffed at for previews, and certainly 100 million is not a shitty opening weekend. It's a solid weekend. But a lot of that, I think it was the last one, was 70-something percent was actually non-domestic box office. Only generally 30 to 45% is actually made within the US. So it's looking at that. I mean, the last one did, what, 353 million domestic through its entire run, which was 1.5 billion worldwide. So it's going it, to... You know, I'm going to put $20 on the table now and say it's going to make a billion.
See, that's what I think.
I think it's going to make a billion, maybe 1.2, 1.1.
1.1 is exactly what I was going to guess. If you look at the domestic opening last night, just 10 compared to 15, you're looking at two-thirds, right?
Yeah.
Two-thirds of 1.5 billion is a billion, and you know, probably be a little bit higher. So,
and it's
1.1.
What a lot of other studios would literally, they would sell a kidney
but
to get an opening.
I don't think that, that this will reach the heights of Furious 7. I don't think it'll hit 1.5. So.
No.
Still a win, one in the win column for Universal, especially given all the drama that happened with this.
And they've got a couple of other movies coming out this, you know, sort of heading into the summer, like Despicable Me 3, which is probably going to be, you know, quite easily again.
Universal's poised for a big year. They have,
yeah,
they have
it's
a big
be,
The Mummy,
be a
I'm
movie.
Really excited for The Mummy, not just as a Tom Cruise guy, but as someone who wants to believe in that universe.
Yeah.
Which we're also going to talk about later. But real quickly, for
but I am going to pay
Furious.
And go and see that
I'll leave you on with like this little note, just like, who's going to direct part 9? You know, I was asking a source, sort of like, hey, who's going to star in part 9? Who's going to be like the new cast edition, that kind of stuff? And they were like, that's not the question you should be asking. You should be asking who's going to direct this movie.
I think they're going to bring back Justin Lin.
Yeah?
I think so.
They could. Because I don't think F. Gary Gray will be back.
No, I don't think so. I think Justin Lin. I think possibly I'd like to see James Wan.
He's
at the helm.
I mean, he seems a little busy.
He seems a little busy, but we're not going to see another Fast and Furious going into production for probably a year. I think then he'll be finished on Aquaman. I think,
and I don't think James Wan will be coming back either.
John McTiernan.
John McTiernan is still very available, though, Universal.
But would you like to see someone with, I mean, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but someone with a bit more gravitas come in and do this? You know, the likes of a Ben Affleck or a Matt Reeves or a someone else. Because I think the biggest flaw in the Fast and Furious movie is sometimes when the movies aren't as good as the other entries in the franchise, it's down to character. Set pieces, they've got that shit nailed. That's not a problem with that area. But I think it's the character and the chemistry and the interaction. And I think if you then, if there are struggles within the casting and you want that to go away, I think you need someone who's going to build a really strong character. So maybe you do need someone like a Matt Reeves or a Ben Affleck to bring out that kind of character thing.
Yeah, and I don't, I think this franchise, It has thrived embracing its stupidity, kind of, and how ridiculous it has become. And it has become ridiculous. It is now venturing into James Bond territory.
Yeah. I think it needs a little bit of a reset.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
A little bit of a...
But I think someone like Ruben Fleischer would be fine doing this. I don't think it needs someone nearly as talented as Matt Reeves or Ben Affleck.
Ryan Johnson?
He's not coming in to do Fast and Furious
Robert
9,
Redford.
Bro. I say that after he did Star Wars 8. I'm like, why would he do Fast 9?
Why would
9?
He do that?
Yeah, I think Ruben Fleischer would be fine.
Bill Condon?
Like this. No. Bill Condon?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you want to move on?
No, I was going to say, no, he. I mean, we will move on to what he's going to, you know, be working on next, but I think he might.
Bill Condon doing a Fast and Furious movie?
Why not?
No, no, no.
People said that when he took on Beauty and the Beast.
No, they didn't. I don't think they did. He had done Dreamgirls, so that actually made sense.
Needs more musical.
Anyways, Bill Condon is doing Bride of Frankenstein
up
at Universal for their Classic Monsters universe. That, I think, is a good hire. Now, while I would have loved to have seen Universal hire a female filmmaker for Bride of Frankenstein, a lot of good female horror directors out there. Condon actually makes sense. He has deep roots in horror. He directed Gods and Monsters, which is about James Whale, who directed Frankenstein in Bride of Frankenstein.
If you haven't seen that, you should really check that out.
Yeah, yeah.
Brendan Fraser is good in it.
And
you don't say that very often.
And he did he did the Candyman sequel. He did Candyman 2, Farewell to the Flesh. So Condon goes way back with this genre, and I actually think he's a really good fit, especially as Beauty and the Beast crosses $1 billion worldwide. You can count on his movies to make money. He also did the last two Twilight films.
Two good suggestions going back to Fast and Furious. Mel Gibson, he wouldn't do it, but not a bad...
Oh, my God.
Not a ridiculous. And James Gunn. I mean, obviously James is busy, but... Scott Derrickson!
I don't see any of these guys. No, no.
John McTiernan?
No. The Fast franchise is not for someone who has already done those big movies.
Branagh.
And so this is another big franchise and it makes sense. And no, no, no. This is for someone who's like on the way up and wants to be one of those directors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele?
No.
I'm just naming people now. The directors that I know.
The Jordan Peele, like, you know.
Scorsese.
Remember that Warner Brothers story that I've said that Warner Brothers really wants to be in business with Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
Akira, The Flash, they're, you know, looking at a whole bunch of things for him. Mm-hmm. I forgot that one of them was Uptown Saturday Night.
Ooh.
Do you know that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were going to have, you know, Denzel and Will Smith do it, and it was going to be Adam McKay directing.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure, yeah, McKay has moved on at this point. They would love to get Jordan Peele directing a movie like that.
That would be awesome.
I don't know if Will Smith is still on board, though. I think it might just be Denzel. But with Jordan Peele, what if, like, it was Jordan Peele directing himself and Denzel? Dude, how do you turn down that opportunity?
That would be awesome.
That would be really funny. And that's right in his wheelhouse. That's like an old school comedy with what? Bill Cosby and who was the other one? I forget. Anyways.
I can't remember. But yeah, that's a great movie. That was so good.
So we talked about Bill Condon doing Bride of Frankenstein. Good hire for Universal there. Paramount, Triple Frontier. Let's back it up.
Okay, cool.
Lot of drama around this movie. Mm-hmm. J.C. Chandor was a month away from going into production with Tom Hardy, Channing Tatum, and Mahershala Ali. That's a pretty bankable cast, Channing and Tom Hardy. And Paramount pulled the plug, you know, weeks after Jim Giannopoulos takes over the studio. You know, apparently it had to do with script changes that J.C. Chandor had done that Hardy was not receptive to.
Okay.
Although I'm not sure if Hardy asked for those changes and then the studio was like, what the fuck is this? I'm not sure how it all went down. Getting some conflicting reports there, but kind of a bummer.
Mm.
This is a Mark Boal script, Oscar-winning writer.
And that's a pairing I would have genuinely liked to have seen on the screen.
Hardy and Channing.
Yeah, I would have really, really had fun with
that. It sounds super cool. I don't know what the movie's actually about. Mm. I just know where it's set, Triple Frontier, like, you know, on the tri-border area, but I never got, like, the hook.
No.
Like, what... Is this, like, who are they playing? Like, what are they up against?
I think with the casting, it's one of those movies where I think the audience would just get on board because of the two leading men.
I think so.
Yeah, I would have thought so. I would be curious to find out exactly what happened with that, because usually when it comes down to writing, they can find some way of getting around that.
How bad was this script? Yeah.
But how... It can't have been that bad, because these guys wouldn't jump on a script that was... really, really bad. Do you know what I mean?
But maybe they jumped on the Mark Boal script, and then J.C. Chandor came on and rewrote it. I don't understand what happened. But again, that already happened to J.C. on Deepwater Horizon. I was a big fan of A Most Violent Year, but I didn't. And I guess I liked Margin Call, and I don't think it was nearly as great as everybody said.
No, it was a good drama.
And I didn't love All Is Lost either, the Redford movie. So I'm like mixed on J.C. He's a nice guy, and I hope that this movie, you know, comes back together. He moves on to something cool, but I guess it's better for Paramount to speak up now, or for the stars to speak up now, than have shit go down during production.
Yeah. A couple of other things. We were talking about box office earlier for Fate of the Furious. This week, apparently, it's quite early because we're like three or four weeks out from it opening, but Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is looking at $150 million for an opening weekend.
Woo! It's way higher than the original's $94 million, right?
Yeah, considerably higher. Captain America Civil War was $179 million, I think. I think, you know, Guardians could... do upwards of 150.
Yeah, tracking is always low.
Yeah, I think it's easily going to touch 175 million, possibly 180, because anticipation for this film is so good, and people obviously, they love the first one. A lot of people went to see that, you know, repeatedly, which was great.
Yeah.
And people have really got an affinity with the characters, and there's been a lot of talk around it, and they've obviously added to that with, like, the likes of Kurt Russell. So I think you're going to, you know, add a bit of heritage audience to that as well. I think 150, you know, as you say, is a little bit low right now. I'm going to go 175, 180 possibly.
Ooh,
as well,
wow.
Which is great.
Okay, elsewhere. We got 3 minutes left. One of them I want to spend talking about Detroit, but quick news hits. It looks like there could be an animated Watchmen movie on the horizon.
Yeah, I saw